Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
Peter, you look very handsome.
ENN's at 6.
When the clock struck 6, it meant one thing.
I want to go chase the squall.
Peter has nothing interesting to say.
This is Gil.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
Welcome to ENN, ladies and gentlemen, on a Monday evening. Hope everyone's doing all right, staying safe, staying inside. Yesterday was horrendous in my neighborhood as far as staying inside goes, by the way.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be horrendous in Atlanta, too, on Friday.
Well, before we look down our nose too far at Atlanta, it's happening here everywhere. I mean, Riverside Park yesterday was just packed.
Well, they're going against the rules. In Atlanta, they're going to be allowed to go to gyms, hair salons, wherever they want to go.
Well, let's see how that plays out.
That is going to be an interesting touchstone on how this is going to develop, because if you say to people, okay, you can do whatever you want, and then they return to doing what they used to do, then I guess you could fill stadiums and you could fill arenas. But if you get the okay from government and then the people still don't want to go out, then that's right. A different story.
Now, how bad is it in Georgia?
It has not been bad.
Right. So, I mean, that's what it really comes down to is that we're... What Peter's afraid of is that people start to go out, it gets warmer, that we're going to go back to where it was a month ago when people were lined up down the street to get into emergency rooms and people were dying in hallways because they couldn't get into a room to get on a ventilator.
But it's amazing.
So that motivates us to not get back to that. But if you're in Georgia where you never really got it as bad, they're thinking then...
But it's so faulty.
No, I 100% agree with you. I'm just saying that that's what their answer would be. Listen,
the cases
if we've
are
only
going
got like a dozen
up.
People dying, then I'm willing to take that chance.
Here's what's nuts. Mm-hmm. This whole thing obviously started with one case, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So their starting point of going back to normal in Georgia is there have been 19,000 cases. Now, I don't know the number of how many recovered, how many still active.
19,000 in Georgia?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not nothing.
Right.
So just think about that as like a... Now, I know it's in New York, there are 253,000 cases. I get it. We are the epicenter. There's no doubt about it. But it's not like they have 6 cases down there.
No, but here's that magic phrase that people have been using, especially those who don't really buy into it. How many people died of the flu last year in Georgia? Like, that's what again, they'll have an answer for everything. But they don't have to live through what we've seen in our local news for the last month and the stories. And also, we all know people that have suffered through this. They probably don't. So they're looking at this. Oh, that's New York's problem. You know, that's not going to happen here. New York's an international city. You know, their airport's bringing people from all over the world.
No airport is busier than Atlanta.
Yep.
I'm just telling you, Michael, they're 100% wrong, all right? And they should be paying attention. But unfortunately, in this country, we're one country divided by 50 different states, and everybody thinks that their situation is unique and different, especially the farther away you get from the epicenter of this. So New York might as well be Timbuktu as far as they're concerned.
I wonder if, like, what happened in Ohio today is a little bit of a cautionary tale, because there was a group of people protesting in Ohio a couple of weeks ago. About the stay-at-home order. I guess Governor DeWise is the name.
The people who looked like The Walking Dead?
Well, I don't know. Well, one of the people that was like one of the speakers for them and said the whole thing was BS, but he didn't initialize it like I am. He said it's all BS, got the virus and died today.
So that became real to him and his family.
Yeah.
And I've seen protesters, Michael, with gloves and masks on. So... You're protesting, but yet you're so afraid to go into public without a mask and gloves. I just think people around the country are making decisions. They are rolling the dice saying, listen, I would rather go out there and take my chances with the virus, because I know if we don't open, I'm going to be homeless.
I would just like to say, we'll move on. I'd like to say one thing on this subject, though, because I don't want to let New York off the hook. You know, we're always so high and mighty about our greatness. I just saw people yesterday. Not only was it crowded out, there are lots of people without masks. And I know they made the rule of basically at a grocery store, at a public place, indoors, you have to have a mask. It should be seen as common courtesy that if you are within New York City or really New York State, but I'll just, if you're in New York City and you are outside of your apartment or home, your face should be covered just from a sign of human decency. Mm-hmm. They have said that a shirt, a rag, a bandana, any of that's effective. Can you just, like, and this happened just now with a neighbor. I just went outside. There was just a neighbor walking in the apartment, the building, with no mask. He had just gone for a jog and he's kind of breathing and walking in the apartment. Dude, just throw a rag over your face, man. Right. Everyone because, should.
Again, people are thinking selfishly and not realizing that, yeah, you're not, you might survive this, but by you going out, you might kill somebody else. And that's what needs to be hammered home here. You want to roll the dice with your life, be my guest. That's your life. That's your prerogative.
But you're rolling it with everyone's.
But if you're rolling it with everybody else's, then that's a problem.
Let's start off by saying good evening to Michael.
Go watch porn on your computer. Stop it.
And let's say good evening to Don.
The Daily Don, you moron!
The Daily
Don! What do you think it is?
That's so playful. You can hear how playful
it is. Yeah, so playful.
Oh, come on. I know
now when you talk
to
your kids like that, they just smile.
How dare you? First of all, you know it doesn't work because I could scream bloody murder at Marco and he'd laugh right in my face.
So, of course, we spent a lot of time talking about The Last Dance. Steve Kerr, this is on SportsCenter, right, Arj?
Yep.
Steve Kerr was on with SVP. By the way, the funniest thing to me last night was that the time we're living in, the lead of SportsCenter is news stories from 1997.
It's amazing. It really is amazing.
It's SVP, seriously, not being sarcastic, giving you the highlights of The Last Dance, which, by the way, it makes sense to lead SportsCenter with it. It was by far the biggest story in sports last night.
But it's just
hilarious.
And especially since that show is kind of based on, you know, talking about whatever the big sporting event
right.
was at
that
particular
was it.
Day, and that was what everybody was watching. But so, probably the most disturbing, before you get to that, though, was the throwback commercial.
With Kenny Mayne? I thought that was brilliant.
It was really well done.
Spooky.
The only thing I didn't like about it was, I didn't like that he said, there's this thing called the butt fumble. It felt out of nowhere to me. It felt very East Coast biased as the moment to signify that times have changed.
Yeah, but it's amazing that he knew that that was going to happen like 30 years ago.
Yeah, really.
Well, I'll explain later. So Steve Kerr was on SportsCenter, and let's hear from the former Bull, now Warrior head coach.
You know, everybody knows how great Michael was, and he went 6-0 in the finals, and you look back and you probably just assume he was so dominant that it was easy. It was not easy. It wasn't easy for him or for anybody. And he made the difficult look easy because of his dominance, but he had to dig so deep year after year, and it took so much out of him. But it was just an incredible thing to be a part of, and just amazing to look back and think, man, I was part of that team, and to live that experience is pretty incredible.
He's had one of the great basketball lives, Steve Kerr. Think about it. He wins the titles with the Bulls, and then he has the team that wins 73 games and wins a couple of titles with Golden State as a coach. That's pretty darn impressive because in Michael Jordan's second career, he's been an awful owner. Awful. Hasn't been able to build a team at all.
And it's funny when they showed the highlight. Was it on SportsCenter, or was it the end of the movie of Kerr talking at the parade?
I think that was one of the promos. They didn't show that yet.
Oh, it was the promo for next week, maybe? And it's funny, when you hear Kerr talking at the parade after hitting the game winner in the finals, now looking back at it, it's like, of course he went on to be a coach. He was just so that guy.
Right.
Even a scene that they showed last night in the episode where he was talking to the media, and you could just see he always knew how to talk to the media, like he was that guy. Mark Henry, my good friend, was on Don's brother's show, Busted Open, and he told a story about the time he met Michael Jordan, and I think it's just telling of sort of what Michael was saying earlier about MJ wasn't necessarily always the smoothest guy around the edges.
Going to the Olympics in 96, I was friends with Charles Barkley. I was friends with Karl Malone and David Robinson. I knew guys on the team personally.
Right.
So I went to the hotel with Charles, and as we're in the lobby, Michael walks up, and it's not, hey, how you doing, guys? What's going on? You know, where are we going? What are we doing? Are we going to play cards? And then it was, who are you? I said, who the f*** are you? And that was the introduction. And Charles was like, whoa. That was the first.
You know damn well. You know who he was. The whole world knew who he was.
But it didn't matter. It was the principality, Smokey. You don't walk up on Mark Henry.
I love
and,
doing this
and
show.
Talk to me like I'm some kind of peon. I was somebody in this world. And then maybe I didn't make the money that you made. Maybe that people don't know my name. I don't sell $1 billion in shoes. But I'm Mark Henry, and if I wanted to snuff your lights out, I could do it in a heartbeat.
Who's Mark Henry?
Mark Henry is a great man, a professional wrestler, and was the legitimate world's strongest man, multi-time U.S. Olympian.
So could he have snuffed out Jordan if he so chose?
He wouldn't have to get up.
But it's not surprising that Jordan didn't know who he was, but it's still disrespectful.
Well, who are you when your friend is talking to other... when someone's talking to your other friends, it's just a weird approach.
Well, maybe that was playful. Who knows?
Playful like Don?
Right.
Exactly.
The Daily Don, you moron!
The Daily
what do you
Don!
Think it is?
So playful. You could tell.
It's a great time.
If you play it up against when I wanted to smack your face dead, it's not even the same strategy.
I was making an your face dead.
You hear it? Guy, you don't know me at all. Really, the two of you. You should be disgusted with yourself. Part of all this thing is you're supposed to know me.
Don't talk to me that way.
You don't know my address.
Peyton Manning on SportsCenter had some advice for Joe Burrow.
I tried to tell him it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Look, I lost more games my rookie year than I had my entire high school and college career combined. I threw 26 interceptions, but I tried to learn a lot that year. I played every game. Jim Mora never took me out. I learned some things in the fourth quarter of those blowouts about what it took to be an NFL quarterback. And the next year, we went from 3-13 to 13-3. That wouldn't have happened had I not hung in there and kind of learned the ropes as a rookie, even though we took some bumps and bruises. So that's what I try to encourage Joe and all the NFL quarterbacks, that your rookie year is not going to be the same as your senior year in college.
You know, when you hear him talk like that, Peter, I could see why they were chasing him for Monday Night Football. I think he'd be great in the booth.
You mean just the style of voice and talking?
Yeah, and the way he gets his point across, and you know, he gets to it quickly. He would be very good, but you know, what does he have to do it?
I'm not really sure that his advice was as topical, because I think things were different when he came up. It was kind of accepted that you were going to be bad your rookie year. Now,
what he was trying to tell the guy, though, the team that picks you earned the fact that they're the number one pick. They're a bad team. You're going to a bad team.
True, but I think that it's scrutinized a lot differently, right? Like, you go.
Darnold was allowed to have a bad year. Jones was allowed to have a bad year.
Well, I don't know how bad Jones's year was. You have wins and losses wise, but we really broke it down where we feel like the kid showed something and that he was good. There's a lot there, but you just you fall flat on your face and you're just awful. You know, that's it's not about the record. It's about you still got to give me a little something, because people are really going to be breaking it down. It's not going to be like the old days. Well, you're on a bad team. You're going to play bad. Don't worry about it. We're going to stick with you. Michael, you go out there and throw, you know, 25 interceptions. You just look god awful. You're not going to get the benefit of that now that you would have 10 years ago.
Look at Haskins in Washington. I mean, he wasn't that bad. He didn't throw 26 interceptions. It wasn't a nightmare. And there's still a lot of question marks because he wasn't great on a bad team.
Yeah, I mean, the bad team.
I hear what you're saying, Don. It is different.
We're not going to grade you on wins and losses, but we're going to want to see something.
Joe Douglas had a conference call. He was asked first, has he spoken with Jamal Adams?
I haven't had any conversations recently with Jamal, and since we've talked. I will say that our voluntary offseason program begins April 27th, and you know, the highlighted word is voluntary.
He was also asked if he wants Jamal to be a Jet long term.
I've made it known that the plan would be for Jamal to be to be here long term. I have to do what's in the best interest of this team, and if other teams call to talk about players, I'll listen. But, you know, going into this draft, you know, my intent isn't to move any players. But if a team calls, we're going to have conversations. So I don't view it as hedging. I view it as doing my job.
Well, if you listen to Peter King, though, he kind of more than intimates that Jamal Adams doesn't want to be here now.
Well, because he's not mature enough to handle the business of sports. Because remember how crazy he got that just the rumor that Joe Douglas took phone calls. Like, Jamal Adams thinks that if your phone rings, don't pick it up because you should sign me. You shouldn't even think about trading me. It wasn't like he was making phone calls to trade Adams. People were calling him. You've got to do your due diligence. Yeah, I'm sorry. He's not untouchable where you're not supposed to take phone calls. You're not supposed to listen to offers. And he got upset because of that. Let's make no mistake, guys. If he ends up leaving, it's going to be because he's going to push the envelope to force the Jets' hand. Because he believes he needs to be so respected, they can't even answer their own phone on calls about him. Give me a break.
And that's what started this whole thing, and here we are.
Exactly.
So Richard Sherman was on the Jalen and Jacoby podcast. He was asked about how much concern he has about the 2020 season, given everything with COVID-19.
I don't worry about it at all. Because I think there was a time during last season where I felt like almost the entire league had it, you know, that there was a time the Patriots were taking a separate plane and everybody thought it was a fluke. Guys are running out of ball games. I think one of the O-linemen for the Vikings had to leave, couldn't even play. He was a starter. So I'm pretty sure it's already been rampant through our league, honestly. Like when they have the antibody test or whatever, I'm sure they'll figure out that a lot of the league has had it and gotten through it because they thought it was the flu. So they didn't quarantine anybody. They didn't separate anybody. They didn't keep guys at home. Guys were still coming to work, going to work, doing the same normal things, interacting with guys, having conversations, practicing. It'll kind of be what it is. You know what I mean? Guys will get tested. They'll do their best. The league will try to keep everybody safe, but it's life.
I've heard this theory from a lot of people that, like, they just assume so many people have had it.
Yeah.
I don't buy it. I don't buy it. If I hear what he's saying, and by the way, you guys remember, I always reference this. I reference our last live event as that moment when I said I didn't want to shake hands because I was so scared of the flu that was everywhere.
True.
But that wasn't spreading like absolute wildfire.
Here's the thing. We didn't have testing, so we didn't know. See, I talked to a doctor who said he believed, he's no expert, but he's a doctor, and he talks to people, that he told me this in early March, that he believed that this was already here for like 2.5 months. But because think of the coincidence. That day, there's two NBA players that test positive. And then it kind of just exploded. Now, did it just explode that day? Or was there more attention on it? It became real. There was more testing to find out who had it. So Gobert didn't get, Gobert didn't become ill or didn't get it the day he was tested. He might have gotten it 2 weeks before then, right? So how many people just had the flu? We said, oh, they got the flu and didn't think anything of it. And then we find out now because there's testing that COVID-19.
But what we've learned here, if anything, about COVID-19 is it spreads quickly among families. Everyone gets it. Like when someone has it in the house, Basically everyone gets it. If his theory is correct, and that's what was affecting the league, it wouldn't have been five players on the Patriots were sick. It would have been 48 players on the Patriots were sick.
I don't think so because they tested every Utah Jazz and there was only two.
I understand, right? But he's saying this is something that was at the tail end and it was one team. He's talking about it went through the entire league throughout the season.
No, I think that might be a bit of an exaggeration, but is it possible that everybody that was out with the flu, like in January or December, that a few of them might have actually had this?
Probably not, because it didn't come here until January.
That's the thing. There was no everyone saying that it was what everyone had, but the cases weren't even reported here until early February, right?
Yeah, and the crazy thing, we talked about this on Friday, at least here in New Jersey, that of the people that have been tested, and remember, you can only be tested with a prescription, which means a doctor heard your symptoms and said you should go get tested, and it's still like under 45% of those people tested have it. So, yeah, maybe it was just a regular flu. Now, there might have been other people that might have had it and maybe didn't show symptoms or whatever, but I think it was here early. It wasn't just all of a sudden, Peter, March 12th it was here.
I agree.
Much earlier, but whether
I just think it was wishful
affecting November, December football, probably not.
I just think that Sherman's philosophy was a little wishful, that like, oh, everyone basically had it and they'll be fine. And we don't even know that that's true. If you've had it, you're fine, but we'll find out. The 49ers are reportedly open to trading both their first and second round picks, according to Adam Schefter. They've been fielding calls about their number 13 overall and number 31 overall, and they're open to dealing both picks. After that 31st pick, San Francisco is not scheduled to pick again until 156 overall in the fifth round.
That's what makes them a good trading partner because of their past history with the Patriots. The Patriots have a lot of picks in the second round, I believe, and they might want to move up to San Francisco's first rounder to get Tua.
And San Fran has nothing in the second round.
Right, so they can reload with second round picks and then get New England's first rounder at the bottom of the first round and allow New England to pick Tagovailoa.
Speaking of the Patriots, they have bumped up their color rush jerseys to their primary uniforms.
I like them. Is it just me, Peter? Every time a team in football says they've changed their uniforms and they put the pictures on Twitter, I don't see the difference. Football uniforms are not distinctive.
Yeah, there's no logo, right?
Just no, helmet. I mean, it looks like a Patriot uniform.
Yeah, when you change any other jersey, right, you're usually changing something about the logo. But football, it's basically the color and a number.
I'm trying to see it.
It looks cool. But I don't know. I mean, without like a comparison, I don't know how different it is from the other one. The colors are the same. Like with the Browns changed the uniform. Really? They're still brown.
No, they added the word Browns, which, by the way, only makes it worse, oddly enough.
Yes. Right. So you accentuate the color.
Why is this so slow? I really want. Oh, here we go.
What is that sticker on your computer that says Dude 420, since today's 420?
Oh.
Hmm.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. It's a good excuse to play some Weed Drops.
Oh, but there's a weed day, right?
Yeah, it's my friend's movie that was called Dude. It's on Netflix. You're looking
for
a movie to watch.
See?
And it came out on 420 a couple years ago.
Had a little something, a little
and
toke.
And 420
of
means weed. Bubonge. Right?
420 is about weed. Yeah, the bubonge. Yeah.
It was
not my favorite day.
Pot.
This is a good day for you to narc, though.
I wonder if I could actually get along with Seth Rogen. I wonder.
I
like Bill Maher. Two people I respect talent wise, but they love pot. Chelsea Handler.
I think you would. I think you get along with a lot of potheads right now. You may not even know it.
Of course you do.
Well, there's you, Don. Who else?
No, I don't partake. No, but I don't judge people on that do.
Oh, I do.
Hockey's biggest star, Wayne Gretzky, is optimistic that the season will resume in the summer. He told the AP, I really believe somehow, some way, that the leadership in this country and in Canada, that we're going to figure this out.
That's a real pie in the sky look.
Yeah, I don't know how much he's been paying attention.
You're not exactly Jonas Salk there.
But, listen, his opinion carries a lot of weight, right? I mean, that's...
No, not scientifically. It carries no weight. No, but...
The fact that Peter even mentioned it in ENN tells you that when Wayne Gretzky speaks, people pay attention, but ultimately...
Well, Don, Gretzky said today, by the way, I'm going to lasso the moon and pull it down. Well, yeah,
let's remember, his nickname is the great one, not the smart one. Let's
all be his biggest star, Wayne Gretzky.
Wait a minute. I'm just saying it carries a lot of weight, meaning when he speaks, people pay attention. But to me, unless your name is Dr. something, I don't really care about your
name. And even if you are, if it's followed by a nickname or your first name, you're a moron.
Well, I guess I could. Yeah, I mean, if you're somebody that went to school,
Dr. Dave,
for infectious disease,
what do you think?
Okay, obviously, then I think. I was doing some investigating and watching some TV that Dr. Phil's number of people drowning in pools was greatly exaggerated.
A Japanese scientist is very pessimistic about the Tokyo Games actually taking place in 2021. Excuse me, he's a professor of infectious disease.
Okay.
And he said, I'm very pessimistic about holding the Olympic Games next summer. Unless you hold the Olympic Games in a totally different structure, such as no audience or a very limited participation. You have to invite so many athletes from many, many places, which is not compatible with COVID-19.
Can you do me a favor, Peter? Keep track of all the things that people say so we have a scoreboard to see who was right and who was wrong.
I know, because a lot of people are coming out with crazy different things. I heard some people saying a vaccine is going to be around in a few months. Then Bill Gates was on TV on Saturday night on national TV and said, you know, we're going to have a vaccine by late next year. We're all over the place here.
Yeah, and but if you have an opinion, like if that professor said, I don't think we're going to have a vaccine that's available to the world by the summer of 2021. Thus, I believe the Olympic Games being held is not going to happen. If you're telling me that even after a vaccine, then when are we ever going to get out from under? Right?
I believe
because then
well,
it's
I think
over.
You could play other sports without fans. I think the Olympics part of it to make the money back for the host country is to have fans.
So, last thing, guys, some rebroadcasts on sports rebroadcast this week.
Oh, good.
Monday, tonight, ESPN's Monday Nighter. This is a fun one. Colts, Pats, 2005, Week 8.
See, now we're talking.
Now we're a little Peyton, a little Manning, yeah. Brady in their prime.
Football.
Also, tomorrow, ESPN, Yankees, Mariners, 1995, ALDS, Game 5.
Ooh, I love baseball.
That. Not a fun one for Yankees fans, necessarily. Also,
I threw my arm during that. I was swinging my arm around, trying to waving them home.
Oh, that's right. I've heard you talk about that. That's right. Also tomorrow night on NBA TV, Knicks Pistons 1984 Ooh. Eastern Conference first round Game 5, a monster night for Bernard King.
Are you watching?
I was watching something on NBA TV a week and a half ago. UB Brown's Knicks teams were good before. Bernard hurt his knee. That was a really good team, really entertaining. But he hurt his knee.
Wednesday, Celtics-Lakers 2008 NBA Finals Game 4, one of the great comebacks in all time in NBA's finals history. Also, Nuggets-Sonics 94 Western Conference Finals. That's when the 8 beat the 1, of course, to Kembe on the floor.
Oh, who can never? That's an iconic image, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Him on his back, holding the ball up.
I consider that a top 5 to 7 upset all time. Thursday, 8 o'clock, Mavs-Warriors, 2007 Western Conference first round when the 8-seed Warriors top the Mavs. That'll do it for ENN on this Monday evening.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
That's right, man.
Don't miss Michael, Don, and Peter weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.